If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home. When I'm
Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by the king of the Power Slam himself, Finn Martin. Hi Finn, how you doing?
Well, I've got to say, Kenny, I'm still mildly traumatised after watching the trailer to the upcoming John Cena movie, Blockers.
Right. Okay, straight out of the gate. Why not? Okay, what was so bad about it? I would have thought that would have been right up your alley. Well, what would you rather go and see? John Cena in Blockers, where he has to drink beer through his arse? Or John Cena as the lead villain in Bumblebee?
Well, I think Bumblebee, actually, because I have watched some of the Transformers movies, so I think I would rather see him in the Transformers spin-off, than the Blockers movie, which, based on the trailer, Kenny, is so puerile as to defy description.
What's so bad about it? In case people haven't seen the trailer, what is so bad about the trailer? I've seen the trailer, so I'm thrilled to look forward to what you're going to say about it.
Just cliched. Just vulgar for the sake of being vulgar. I mean, Cena's like massively overacting in the trailer, which he knew he was going to do.
Very unlike him.
Very unlike him, exactly. Yeah, I've often said that on this very podcast, Kenny. But it's just all these sort of really sort of sleazy jokes, and it's just that toilet humor that, you know, just, I mean, it's just, come on, Kenny, it's just like, people say that the wrestling business lacks imagination. I mean, if I was working in the film industry, I think I would be at the point of despair that movies like this are being made, because there's obviously an audience for them, otherwise they wouldn't be made. You know, I get, that's the most discouraging thing, isn't it, that people will probably go and see this, and then another movie of this ilk will be made.
It's funny because, like, the big four wrestlers who have become movie stars or are becoming movie stars in John Cena's case, you've got Hulk Hogan, who had varying levels of success. But my favorite quote was, one of Jericho's books, and Jericho had said that in 2002 there was a house show that Jericho, Rock, and Hogan were all on. And Rock was just becoming big in the movies at the time. And Rock had said to Hogan and Jericho, do you want to get on my jet back to Tampa rather than, you know, get the commercial flight? So they both got on the flight and they're all having a drink on the plane. And Hogan just turned around to Rock and said, you know, you're so lucky now. You know, you don't have to compete with all the guys I had to compete with. I had to compete with Stallone and Schwarzenegger. And he said, you know, I think if I'd had the space to do different things, I really think I could have been the Gene Hackman of the 80s.
You know, The French Connection is like one of my favourite films, Kenny. I've got like a original film poster of The French Connection on the wall. And Hulk Hogan is no Gene Hackman. You
know? I would have loved to have seen Hulk Hogan in the Birdcage as Gene Hackman if they were able to do that. But yeah. So The Rock did it, and after Hogan, and was obviously the biggest successful story. Batista has become madly successful, you know, roles in Guardians of the Galaxy, Spectre, the James Bond movie, recently Blade Runner, which I'm going to see on Sunday. And then you've got John Cena, but I think that John Cena is the one that, like, has he actually shown that he's a good actor in any of the movies yet? I mean, Hulk Hogan didn't show either, so I don't want to pretend like I'm just ragging on Cena, but I'll give you this. I thought he was funny in Trainwreck, or Trainwrecked, whatever it was called. I thought he was quite funny in that, just as the kind of, you know, over-the-top muscle boyfriend guy in a bit part. I thought he was funny there, but the blockers thing does look horrendous.
Oh, it just does, doesn't it? It just looks like it's aimed at 14-year-olds. And, you know, if people go and see it and it makes money, then hey. And you know what? If it keeps him out of the wrestling ring, Kenny, I'm not complaining.
So we've got a lot to talk about here today. We've got to talk about the fact that Jinder Mahal has challenged Brock Lesnar for Survivor Series. Kane has returned, and lots of other stuff. But I want to kick it off with news that I did not think we were going to have to cover here today. Now, obviously, we have covered at length the trials and tribulations of our good old friend Impact Wrestling, haven't we?
Yes, we have.
We've talked about the regime changes, the name changes, the departures, the debuts, all the sort of stuff that goes in between. But I didn't think that the next thing we'd be talking about is one of their attempts to build publicity for Bound for Glory weekend, or week as it is, in Ottawa, Canada, because this, I think it's today as we record this, actually.
Yes, that's right.
Friday, in Ottawa, Canada, at the Crust and Crate Pizza Pub in Ottawa, they will be launching the Impact Pizza and official signature beverage as part of the publicity for Bound for Glory. Lashley and Eli Drake are going to descend upon the pub to eat slices from the inaugural pizza. Holy fuck. I mean, what do you even say to this?
Well, when I first saw it, I thought it was a joke. I thought this is like somebody's having a laugh at Impact Wrestling's expense. And then I went on the website and it was like one of the lead stories on the website. I mean, obviously not a whole lot happens in this company. It's one of the big stories, and they're like shouting this from the rooftops that this is coming up. And I'm like thinking, I don't blame them. If they would, I wouldn't blame them for doing this locally in the local market to try and drum up some business for Bound for Glory at the Aberdeen Pavilion and the Impact tapings, which will take place at the same venue from November 6th to November 10th. So locally, I don't blame them for doing this, but advertising this on the website was just like, do you realize how rinky-dink this makes you look? And obviously they either don't or they don't care. So locally, I think I could understand why they would do it, Kenny. But actually advertising this internationally, it's just like, I mean, it's just at this point, knocking this company is like, it's tantamount to bullying, isn't it? It's like shooting fish in a barrel. You know what I mean? It just is.
Well, I think that what we need to do to really put ourselves in perspective here, let's see what the Crust and Crate Fast Fire Pizza Pub's all about. Let's read some reviews of what they've had. So Patty Kilby Lowe went to the pub actually the other day. She was there on October 17th. And she said that we went to the newer location on Ogilvie Road, which is the one that the pizza will launch at. Here was her one-star review. Horrible. Food was dry and rubbery. Shorted 3 ounces on wine. Environment was nice and clean. Service was okay. So it was not a great start for them.
No.
But then Kathy Smith, she's there to really get the scoop for us. She said, in her two-star review, the waiter was very nice, but the menu is limited, and I found the pizza was nothing special.
Well, she hasn't tried the Impact pizza yet, because that makes its debut today.
So maybe they have just really went all out for this pizza. There's a great post, actually, on Twitter by the Attitude Era podcast, where they have a picture of the Impact pizza. And it's just a picture of a pizza, where it's been opened up and all the cheese has just congealed to the top. There's nothing left but base on the bottom. But, I mean, are they taking the piss, though?
Maybe they are. Maybe this is just maybe everyone's just stopped caring. It's just like, let's just put that out, you know? It's just a laugh, you know? Everyone's just like...
Wouldn't they be best served, right? So say, how much do you think, just give me a ballpark figure, how much do you think it's costing them to make an Impact pizza? Just any figure out of your head.
Well, I can't imagine it's really costing them that much, because presumably the Crust and Crate will get something out of this. Well, possibly increased attendance. I mean, who knows?
Maybe decreased. If you know what Impact tapers are like.
You know, maybe they'll be stigmatized by an association through Impact Wrestling. But there again, based on those reviews that you've just read out, Kenny, I mean, things could only improve from here, really. Surely.
Well, say it costs $500, right, or $1,000. Wouldn't Impact be as well to just, like, hire some sort of legend for a one-off shot at the pay-per-view?
Well, probably, yeah. I mean, maybe it's, I don't know whether it's costing any money. Maybe it's like a joint, you know, they call it, what do they call it? An official partnership. Wow. You know, it's going to last a week.
You know? I've got to say though, of all the things that I've read, someone responded to your Facebook post. You can go and just type in Finlay Martin. You can find Finn on Facebook, but he, Marlon Arancibia, had my favourite response to you had posted about the situation. I did read this in the Raw Rundown, but I do need to read it again. Here's what he had to say. The Impact Pizza, a very cheesy product with a disappointingly small base, made with stale ingredients that make it hard to digest. The Impact Signature Beverage fails to create a buzz and leaves a nasty taste in the mouth. I mean, the jokes write themselves.
They just do, yeah. They do, you know. And someone else wrote, you know, it's everyone needs to get a piece of the action.
Oh, nice.
All the people involved in Impact, you know, need to earn a crust somehow. You know, someone else came up with that one. I'm sorry, I've forgotten the person's name. I apologise.
But my God. But, you know, I guess that we do probably need to cover Bound for Glory in some form.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, it does look like a nice building, this Aberdeen Pavilion. It's a really nice looking building. And as some people have pointed out, it will be nice to see, I was going to say TNA then, Impact Wrestling, Impact Wrestling in a different venue in front of wrestling fans. This is, of course, if they can sell tickets to wrestling fans, you know. Maybe they would be better spent investing the money, you know, in like local, you know, ticket giveaways and things like that to try and get some people in the venue. And maybe that's what they'll be doing at the Crust and Crate. Maybe if you go along, they'll be doing some sort of offers there where if you go to the pub, then you get, you know, discounted tickets and things like that. I mean, I'm sure they're doing all those things to try and get a crowd, some people through the door for this show. So, or for these shows rather. So,
and maybe they're going to sell the Impact Pizza and Signature Beverage at the events.
Yeah, maybe so. I mean, it's all a bit sad, really, isn't it, Kenny, that it's come to this?
I just had a quick Google there. I hadn't looked at it before. The Aberdeen Pavilion reminds me a little bit of when Charlie Caruso was outside the Blackpool Empress Ballroom in January. You were trying to tout the excitement that was happening in the high street outside of a Bella Italia restaurant. So, yeah, I mean, do you know what? There's a morbid curiosity. I'm looking forward to seeing what the hell happens. I mean, Impact Wrestling really are the Michael Myers of professional wrestling. No matter what you do to it, it will come back. You can set it on fire, you can throw it off a bridge. They'll just always come back.
Yeah. So, I mean, in all seriousness, Kenny, I mean, even if Impact Wrestling was a hot promotion that could sell tickets, it's still quite ambitious to run events from November 5th to November 10th at the same venue, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, because it's not like, there's been times before with Impact where maybe, you know, it's not been like, you know, the highest rated show, but the stuff's been really good. So, you know, if you were in the town, you would probably go along and watch the tapings. But if Impact was in, like, if this was all happening in Glasgow and somebody said, right, okay, do you want to come? I'd go to Bound for Glory and I'd maybe go to one of the tapings, but there's no way I'd go to all five nights.
You just wouldn't be able to stand it. It's just too much, isn't it?
I just don't know what. Yeah, I mean, and how many TVs are they going to tape? That's going to be through like what, February or something?
I guess so. Yeah. Anyway. I mean, it's a ton of stuff. I mean, I just dread to think how few people will be there by November 10th, and how creative they'll have to be with the camera work.
Jesus. So let's talk about some other stuff. So there's last week we touched a little bit on the Neville situation, and it's reported that he is gone now. From WWE, it's just a matter of time of whether they're going to give him his release or whether he's going to have to sit it out. But another person that's come into the news is Nia Jax. She's apparently taken a leave of absence. It was reported by Ryan Satin at Pro Wrestling Sheet and Dave Meltzer that she is taking a leave of absence, and then Alexa Bliss did an interview yesterday where she said that Nia just needs a reset. She needs a little bit of time to just kind of, you know, recuperate. The schedule's very demanding, but she's not going anywhere, and she'll be back for the European tour. What do you make of this Nia Jax situation?
I mean, there's a lot of reports going around that she's not happy with the money, which I can well believe. There's a lot of people who work for WWE who are not paid well. I mean, the top guys are, but a lot of the underneath players are not. And it is a very demanding job. I mean, I think the timing of it for her is poor, Because, I mean, at No Mercy, she was, I mean, it was a very commanding performance in the, was it five-way match? Five-way match? Yeah, it was a five-way match, wasn't it, at No Mercy? I mean, I thought she was the star of that match. Okay, they've moved over to Mickie James versus Alexa Bliss, but I mean, that's just a short-term program. I mean, there's no way Mickie James is winning the belt on Sunday. I can't see her winning it. So this is just something just to occupy Alexa Bliss. And I think Nia Jax could have played a large part in that. So I mean, the timing of it does seem rather odd. And WWE, or rather unfortunate, I think is the word for her. WWE, when people do this, WWE then gets very leery about pushing them in future. You know, if you don't prove yourself to be reliable, if you don't prove yourself to be absolutely committed to WWE and willing to give up your entire life for the company, then they'll say, well, you know, we'll push someone who is willing to do that. So this could have long-term ramifications for her, Kenny, in my opinion. I mean, will they get behind her when she returns? I mean, I don't blame her. I mean, the thing is, you know, it is a tough life being a wrestler, there's no doubt about it. And if you feel like it's not working for you and you can take a leave of absence, then you should do it. But I think there will be a price to pay down the line. What do you think of it, Kenny?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's, obviously with her storyline, it's kind of gone back and forth because she was basically going to challenge Alexa Bliss and then all of a sudden they were friends again and then she wasn't going to challenge her. I mean, she has been one of the most protected women on Raw. I don't think she's been booked particularly badly. I think that she's done well. I think that she's got a good spot. So I don't necessarily believe that she, you know, wants out or anything. I think it's probably just more, she's burned out, you know, she's got on the main roster. It's I mean, to go from the NXT schedule to the main roster schedule is incredibly tough. You know, she knows she's got this European tour coming up in 2 weeks. So this is probably the best time for her to just take a little reset.
Yeah.
So, and I hope that the thing that she's got going for her, she does have that relationship with The Rock. You know, she is related to him. So I can't see them punishing her or anything for it, because of that relationship that she has. And I think that she's just a really unique member of the roster. I really like her, so I hope that she is back. I think the Survivor Series 5-on-5 Raw versus SmackDown women's match would suffer without her.
Yeah.
So I'm hopeful that she's gonna make it back.
I mean, I'm hoping so as well, because, I mean, you know, presumably, I don't know how soon we're going to see Asuka challenge Alexa Bliss. Will it be as soon as the night after TLC? I mean, we all know that that's the direction it's going in. So if Nia Jax was part of that, she could wrestle Asuka first. Asuka could defeat Nia Jax, and then Asuka could face Alexa Bliss. So Jax could be a big part of that storyline, which could then lead to a actual permanent split between her and Bliss, and then maybe a title run in early 2018. So, yeah, if she only has short time off and comes back and is slotted into that storyline, you know, hopefully she'll be able to get that momentum back. You know, we'll see what happens. I mean, I think you're definitely right, is that if she needs the time off, she's feeling burned out, then she should take that time off. And if it does result in her career stalling for a time when she comes back and she has to earn her stripes again with WWE, then so be it. But better to do that than to just reach the point where you're just ready to quit or whatever. Like, from what I understand, that's what happened with Neville. He just had enough and just walked out. He just had enough of WWE, did not want to be there anymore. That's what I understand. My understanding is that is the cause of his departure. He just had enough of working there.
Yeah, and apparently as well, and it may sound trivial to us, but his match with Austin Aries was knocked off the DVD release of WrestleMania, which takes away a fair amount of royalties for you, I think. So that's probably didn't help matters for him.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's all these little things, isn't it? I'm sure there's been like many, many things, and not one thing would be enough to prompt him to go through the exit. But all the things combined were like, that's it. You know, I don't feel like I'm valued by the company. I don't feel like my career is going in the direction that I would like it to go in. It's time for me to take control, get out there on the indie circuit and do things my way. So, yeah, I wish him, I'm sure you do as well, Kenny, we wish Neville all the luck in the world once he gets that release, and I'm sure he'll do well on his own as the master of his own destiny.
Yeah, I think he'll do absolutely fine. I did want to talk a little bit, before we get into kind of talking about Raw and SmackDown, as we usually do, some kind of Ring of Honor news, actually. So Ring of Honor have been kind of tearing up recently in terms of their live events. You know, they were in Chicago recently and drew 2,500 fans, which is the second largest ROH crowd in history. They sold it in 3 days. Kenny Omega was part of the show, but obviously they've got the Bullet Club's really hot right now with Cody and the Bucks and Marty Scurll, etc. But there was a little kind of bit of back and forth between Cody and Roman Reigns. I don't know if you heard about this, where Cody had said in an interview that he was the the biggest draw in all of wrestling. You know, kind of like a cutting a promo like he was the world champion, because he said before he's very influenced by Ric Flair, wearing the suits and all that sort of stuff. And then Roman Reigns, somebody tweeted the article to Roman Reigns, and Roman Reigns responded saying, "I don't even need to click the link and watch it. If that house didn't draw over 100k, he's just talking silly." And Cody did a promo in ROH saying that that tweet got under his skin, and that Roman Reigns is a guy who wears a vest in his matches to hide his gut and hide his failed drug tests. And that Roman Reigns was really hiding envy. Ring of Honor isn't an indie, it's a club. So there's, a little bit of kind of back and forth there. What do you think about kind of Roman responding to that? Because obviously the thing that's interesting is the houses in WWE recently have not been great. You know, they've not sold out pay-per-views, they've not sold out TVs, and Roman Reigns is kind of, doing his company line of responding to "I'm the guy," but then Cody's now actually moving numbers for another company. Well, not at the same level. It's quite interesting, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's like, as you say, Ring of Honor is a company that's on the ascent right now. It's not going to draw what WWE is going to draw. We know that. But the numbers are going in the right direction, whereas over in WWE, the numbers are going in the wrong direction. I imagine there is a little bit of sour grapes there from Roman Reigns. About that, and good for Cody Rhodes and the Bullet Club. And, I've been catching up on my New Japan Wrestling this week, Kenny, and it's amazing how over the Bullet Club and the Elite and that whole thing is. And they're just seen as like this cool entity. And it really occurred, and also watching Ring of Honor as well, and they're so over. Fans are so into these guys and buying the merch, and you often see the Bullet Club merch at WWE events as well, don't you?
I think that you see more Bullet Club t-shirts at shows than anything else, and that's yes. WWE. Even when I was at WCPW, that's the cool thing to wear.
Absolutely, it is, and they whether you like them or not, they are seen as a cool entity right now. And you look at WWE and say, right, who in WWE is cool? Which faction or which act is really seen as cool? And it's hard to name one, really. I mean, you could probably say The Shield, but I mean, they've only been back together like a week, and I wouldn't really call them cool. And I don't think it's going to be a long-term thing, and I can't imagine anyone else thinks it's going to be a long-term thing either. It's just something to keep these guys occupied until Royal Rumble, when they'll go off and do their own thing again. But nothing in WWE really feels cool right now, whereas the Bullet Club, which has been around for many years, I mean, let's face it, it was Fergal Devitt after his heel turn in, was it 2013, I believe it was, in New Japan, he did the heel turn. So, I mean, Bullet Club's been going now in various incarnations for about 4 years. And with no sign at all of running out of steam. And on the contrary, I mean, they seem to be getting hotter, Kenny. So, I think Cody Rhodes is playing it beautifully, because he's like the underdog. He's the guy who is the defiant one, who said to WWE, I've had enough. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to take control of my career like Neville's going to. And he's proven that to be far more successful on his own than he ever was in WWE. I think that's fair to say. Okay, he'll have made more money in WWE. I imagine he made more money in WWE. But he's doing very well for himself right now independently. You've got a guy there who's really proven that he doesn't need the WWE machine behind him. And when you're in WWE, that's something that, you know, you almost, you know, you're part of like a big system there, and you have to believe in the system. You're basically conditioned to believe in the system, that this is the big time, this is where you need to be, and this is where it's at, and anything else isn't as good as this. So when you've got a guy like Cody Rhodes, who's proving to the world that he's been far more successful without the WWE machine behind him, and is pushing numbers upwards while the big company's numbers are going downwards, you can see how Roman Reigns might get annoyed, Kenny.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I did check out some of Global Wars, the show where Cody was talking about it, and there's a really good angle with Cody and Dalton Castle, who's just back from an injury. I know they're getting a program. And the thing that kind of struck me about the show was, you know, the Bullet Club, with the Bullet Club being cool, the Bullet Club are all over the show. You know, you got Marty Scurll faced Takahashi at one point. You had an eight-man tag with the Bucks, Cody, and Hangman Page. So, because, and then Omega in the main event against Yoshihashi. And the thing is, when you got them all over the show, it spreads out the cool factor. You know, you've got it throughout the show. It's not like, you know, like on Sunday when we watch TLC, we have the Shield in the main event. And that's, you know, that's a one-match show, essentially.
Yes.
But this is, you know, throughout the show, which I think is cool. I do also want to touch very briefly on Bully Ray. Did a promo on the show where he basically retired from pro wrestling. He said that he needs to think about his health, and they gave him a standing ovation. He gave, like, a piece of broken table to a kid and stuff, and that seems to be it for him. I got to work with him earlier on this year in WCPW, and the guy's really good as a heel, and I think his Bully Ray character that he did in then TNA, I wish that WWE had let him do that character when he came back in 2015, because he's so good at being an arsehole.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I wrote that many times, and it was just classic stubborn WWE. We know better. You know, someone else's ideas couldn't possibly be better than our own, even though they've just been proven to be superior. Just use your WWE, really, Kenny. No sense in really dwelling on it. Mostly because I've written about it so many times before. I think I've even talked about it before as well on podcasts. Just a shame. Yeah, I mean, they brought back, it's like it was instead seeking nostalgia with the Dudley Boys. And nostalgia only ever lasts for, there's only a certain amount of life in a nostalgia act. You could have brought him in as Bully Ray. He could have worked with all the top faces, and he would have put them all over, and like everyone would have got something out of it, and then they could have done the Dudley Boys nostalgia act after that. But, you know, WWE knows best, Kenny. What do I know?
I know. What do you know? You've only been writing about it for 25 years. And that's, it'll be interesting as well when Jeff Hardy comes back in WWE. Do they try and continue the nostalgia with the Hardys? Because if they do, it's probably not going to mean much. And the Hardys are still at a point where they mean something, I think, and should mean something. So we'll see what they do. But let's talk a little bit about Raw. What did you think of the show? It's the go-home for TLC. The story of the show was essentially, you know, throughout the night that The Miz wanted a fifth partner because Ambrose had said that they could fight four or five guys. And it ended up that in the cage match main event with Roman and Braun, if Braun won, they got a fifth partner. If Roman won, Braun was out of the match and would go back to being 3-on-3. The Shield were back in their full gear, got the music, and it was revealed at the end of the show that Kane was the fifth partner when he helped Braun dispose of Roman Reigns. What did you think of the show and the thread throughout the night of the fifth member?
I think I'll just talk at first about the fifth member being Kane, coming up through the canvas like something from, you know, 10, 15 years ago. I just thought it was like someone's idea of a joke. I thought it was quite interesting that for a few weeks, WWE had apparently given up on hour three of Raw. They put the cruiserweights there. And I was speaking to somebody about this, and it was just like, and he was like, oh, yeah, they're not bothered about hour three anymore. And I said, well, they will be, because in a few weeks, Vince will change his mind, and then hour three will become really important again. And when they announced like a cage match between Strowman and Roman Reigns in the main event, yes, suddenly hour three is all important. We need people to watch hour three again. what was noticeable to me was that Strowman really feels like he's been his aura has just been crushed. I mean, we know this from the Lesnar match, and and you think, well, is it the crowd? Is it that venue? Is it that city that's just not into him anymore? And Reigns and Strowman had to work so hard to get the fans into that cage match. I mean, in a sense, they were swimming upstream because we just had Hell in a Cell. So putting another cage match on TV right after Hell in a Cell kind of felt a bit flat, didn't really feel like a big thing. Whereas, you know, if they do a cage match main event now and again on Raw, SmackDown, it does feel quite big. But coming off Hell in a Cell, it really didn't feel like it mattered that much. It was very noticeable to me that Strowman just felt like he'd had all the air sort of squeezed out of him. He didn't really feel like a big deal anymore. That was very noticeable in this match. I mean, happily, Strowman and Reigns worked so well together that they were able to get the fans into the match, and it was quite hot towards the end of the match. Then Kane comes up through the canvas, and it was just, to me, it was just ludicrous, Kenny. The amount of punishment that Reigns took before he was pinned was just like, come on. I just thought, Kane burst through the ring canvas, gave Reigns, I think it was two choke slams. Then Braun hit the power slam, and then Kane performed a tombstone on Reigns, followed by another power slam from Strowman, and finally Strowman pinned Reigns. And it was just like, I just thought that was prostituting finishers to the extreme, Kenny. I just thought that was. I don't know what the hell they were trying to prove there. I guess the idea was, oh, Reigns is so invincible. Reigns is so tough that we've got to hit him with all these finishers to beat him. But instead of making Reigns look tough, to me, it just made all the finishers look impotent.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to admit, I think they did a good job in telling the Kane return story. Like, I don't think anybody saw it coming. I thought it was fun. The idea that it's Kane is a different thing. I mean, the thing with Kane is that I just need someone to explain the wig to me. Someone needs to explain why the hair gets thicker every time and darker every time. You know, I just don't understand it. It was nice to see Kane hit a good tombstone for once. He usually has quite naff tombstones, so I'm trying to be positive. I guess the story is going to be there's going to be dissension between Kane and Strowman on Sunday. I imagine that's what it is. But
I mean, they seemed to be getting on quite well at the end there, didn't they?
They did. They were doing a nice wee pose, the Monsters of Destruction. But
and again, you know, we've got 5-on-3, and prior to No Mercy, Braun Strowman would never have been in a match like this. He wouldn't have needed it. It would have been the three members of the Shield against one Braun Strowman. And like, well, can the Shield take out Braun Strowman, the monster among men? And now he's a member of a 5-man team against 3. So it just illustrates really how far Strowman has fallen in the space of just a few weeks. Elsewhere on the show, Finn Balor did a promo and then he changed his appearance.
Oh,
so it's
for
gonna
fuck's
be,
sake.
So it's going to be the Demon versus Sister Abigail at TLC this Sunday. How many people really want to see this match? I mean, I just don't get it. And now the words come out. I mean, I'm kind of spoiling the story we're talking about at the moment. Now the words come out that it's actually going to be Jinder Mahal versus Brock Lesnar at Survivor Series, not Finn Balor versus Brock Lesnar at Survivor Series. I was kind of wondering how they were going to get Finn from the feud with Bray Wyatt to Lesnar. But there again, you know, when it comes to storyline transitions, WWE isn't really that bothered about them making sense. So I thought they'd just do it anyway. But yeah, this Demon versus Sister Abigail, I don't really know what to make of that at all. Surely it's got to be the end of this feud. It has to be. But we've said that before, Kenny.
Well, apparently, Bo Dallas suffered viral meningitis, not from watching this feud, but just in life. And JoJo and Bray Wyatt have been kept off TV as well. PW Insider reported that's what's wrong. And there's apparently a viral meningitis scare on the Raw roster right now.
Okay.
Which is going to potentially put some matches in TLC in trouble. If Bray Wyatt wasn't able to wrestle on Sunday, it might be a blessing. I'm just saying. And I'm glad that Finn Balor's not facing Brock Lesnar at Survivor Series, because, my God, this has just killed Finn Balor.
Yeah.
Killed him dead.
Yeah.
So I hope that he manages to beat Sister Abigail or Norman Bates, whoever the fuck it is he's wrestling, and they can give him something good to do in November and December before inevitably he faces Brock at Royal Rumble, which seems to still be the plan because Finn's still talking about Lesnar.
Yeah.
But my God, yeah, they need to do something to heat up Finn Balor, and don't put him with fucking Elias or Bray Wyatt. Just do something. Like, do you know what? And this is going to make you roll your eyes. You're going to hate every second of it. I wouldn't even mind if they did. Like, why can't we see Finn Balor versus Kane? Demon versus Demon. That would make more sense.
Well, it would. It would, yeah.
At least that'd be something. But instead, and he's bringing back the Demon again to face the same guy that he's beat twice.
What can be said at this point, Kenny? What
he's
more
beat him as the
demon.
Said? He's beat him as the man. He's going to beat him as the pumpkin. Who cares?
It's just, I mean, it's just like this creative team is so dry, isn't it? You know, I wouldn't say they're like barren. It's not like a wasteland because, you know, they are producing some interesting things, but there's just so many misfires and there's so many sort of black holes in the show where it's just like this could be so much better without too much effort invested. I mean, the one I'm kind of moving over to SmackDown here, Kenny, but this was something I wanted to mention last week. Eric Rowan, Luke Harper, the Bludgeon Brothers, just out of the blue, have formed a tag team. When they appeared on last week's SmackDown and we saw them from the back and then they turned round, I thought at first it was Fandango and Tyler Breeze having a laugh. I thought it was like a joke. And then they turned round and they did like this creepy promo. The last time we saw these two, they were at odds. Remember back in May, they fought, I believe it was Payback.
Maybe they were in the jungle and they just met up and they were like, how you doing? You're not doing anything. I'm not doing anything. Do you want to just be a tag team?
Well, how difficult would it have been for them to just do some sort of little vignette with them there in the swamp, meeting up? Where's your career going, Eric? Nowhere. Where's your career going, Luke? Nowhere. I know, let's form a tag team. Okay. Some version of that. But instead, they've just reunited without any explanation. And, you know, they've been a tag team before 2013 to 2014 when they were in the original Wyatt family. Then we had the Wyatt family reunion, which I think was in 2015. So they've done the tag team again. Then they feuded, and it's like now they're back together again, clearly because creative has no other ideas for them. And that is just so obvious when you watch so many things on WWE programming. There's no new ideas coming through, or perhaps no new ideas being allowed to come through, you know, or the creative team are there reading the landscape. Right, what does Vince want from us? He doesn't want us to be too imaginative about this or this, so we need to just say this, and then he'll say yes to that, and then we'll keep our jobs. And that's the way it works there, where you've got to play the game.
I do want to say, before, because we should move to SmackDown in a second, but let's touch on TLC for just a minute, because I actually do think that Raw lately has been the better show for me. I enjoy the show more. Even though it's longer, I just kind of feel like more stuff clicks for me. And I think the Shield reuniting has been a little jolt in the arm that Raw's needed, personally. I think it's been quite good. The Miz, I think, has been on fire. I also thought that real props this week need to go to Curtis Axel, who I thought played his role excellently when he was trying to give Cesaro and Sheamus a pep talk. I was just in fits of laughter. Because, you know, he's trying to talk to them like he's, you know, imparting this great wisdom from all of his great glory that he's had in his career. And Sheamus and Cesaro just can't be bothered with him. And then you've got Strowman, you know, just being Braun Strowman in promos, telling Curtis Axel to go and find Roman Reigns and try and beat him up. I thought all the kind of backstage stuff that they did and the stuff with the heels, for me, worked very well and I enjoyed it.
Okay.
And also, Asuka is going to be debuting on Sunday against Emma, so hopefully Asuka has a decent showing. And the one other thing from Raw that I want you to just give me your thoughts on, what did you think of Kalisto's promo this week?
Enzo, there ain't going to be no excuses at TLC when I come out new Cruiserweight champion, as he stood there wearing the Cruiserweight title belt. I mean, Enzo, to his credit, did not burst into peals of laughter or do what Cena would have done in that situation and start ripping the piss out of him. I mean, Enzo actually handled that pretty well. You know, he did not draw attention to the blunder. But his most memorable promo since his infamous one after the 2016 draft. Do you remember that one, Kenny?
Was that when he said he was going to go and do some lucha things and ran away?
That was one of those all-time classic balls-ups, you know?
Like, the thing is, now, because you're more of a wrestling aficionado than I am, because I'm shamelessly, you know, pretty much just a WWE viewer. That's just kind of what I watch for the most part. Did you ever get to see stuff from Kalisto before he was Kalisto, when he was, what was his name before? Samurai Del Sol, or was that what his name was? Am I getting that wrong?
I saw him in NXT, but never saw him prior to that.
Because I've heard that he was really good, and I think he's shite. Like, I just don't get it. He botches more than fucking Sin Cara. He can't cut a promo to save his life. I mean, when you were reading out that promo that he did this week, where he says, you know, there ain't no way on Sunday that you know, you won't win because I'll, and then he pauses as if he's completely lost what he's going to say. And it's like, it was one sentence. How can you get lost midway through one sentence? He's so terrible.
In the ring, I don't think he's had some good matches. He's had some moments. I mean, I've talked before about the series with Ryback, which I thought was a triumph in the fact that these two guys were able to make those matches work. Obviously not a triumph for Ryback because he ended up quitting over it, basically. I don't think he's that awful in the ring, but to me, he's not somebody that's magical either. And he's not somebody that you look forward to watching. I mean, he's like one of those guys who'll come out and you think, well, I'm not really that interested in this, but maybe it'll be better than my expectations. Maybe it'll hold my attention. He's one of those type of guys that probably can have a good match with the right opponent, but he's not a must-see act. He's not somebody that I'm that bothered about. I mean, if I never saw him perform again, I wouldn't feel like I was missing out. He's one of those type of guys.
Before we move on to SmackDown very quickly, because you've brought him up, so he's come off my head, I want to get your take on something. You know our friend Ryback?
Yes.
He has his own podcast.
He does, yeah.
And this week, he was asked by his new co-host, who is a female porn star, if he would ever date a female wrestling fan, and he said no because of the mental issues. So he basically saying that wrestling fans have mental issues. Is that the best thing for Ryback to say when he's trying to, you know, get a fan base behind him?
No, it isn't. It's he should hopefully on his next podcast he will apologize for that, Kenny. That's
hopefully. That's so really, let's talk about SmackDown. The big news coming out of it is Jinder Mahal has challenged Brock Lesnar for Survivor Series champion versus champion. It's real.
Yeah, it's really going to happen. I mean, we sort of heard. I mean, there was rumors that it was going to be Finn Balor versus Brock Lesnar at Survivor Series. Then that was changed. It was going to be Jinder Mahal versus Brock Lesnar. And yeah, I was thinking to myself, is this really going to happen? Are they really going to present this match? I mean, how many people want to see this match? I mean, who believes that Jinder's going to win? I mean, what's the point of it? There's no title on the line anyway. It's yet another example of WWE booking this match between two guys to give them something to do. Jinder issued the challenge on SmackDown this week. On Raw on Monday, Lesnar and Heyman presumably will respond. One would imagine that they're going to accept, setting up a match really no one wants to see. I mean, this is about as appealing to me, Kenny, as the Demon versus Sister Abigail.
I will give Jinder a tiny bit of credit. I thought his promo when he challenged Lesnar was decent. I'll give him that. I thought he did an okay job in putting that across. But yeah, I think the thing is, you know, is Lesnar going to win? Is Jinder going to win? Have they lost leave of all their set? Because the thing is, they've kind of painted themselves into a corner, because if Lesnar beats Jinder, then they are confirming that the WWE title on SmackDown means nothing. But then if Jinder beats Lesnar, then you've given away this big Lesnar defeat to Jinder.
That's right. And if Jinder beats Lesnar, it means that then we'll have to have a rematch and Lesnar will have to beat Jinder. Thus getting us back to the same position that we're at now. So WWE, don't bother doing it. You know, just have Lesnar go out on Monday and just say, I'm sorry, but he's just not good enough to face me. I reject the challenge. And if they were
so much to
say that, or something to that effect, that would be a really interesting response, Kenny. And they could do a lot with that. You could go back to Jinder and say, well, what do you make of this, Jinder? Lesnar doesn't think that you're in his league. And that could create quite an interesting storyline. Maybe that's what they're going to do. Can I just mention about the Jinder's promo? Yes, I was more commenting on the match itself and the fact that I'm not interested in seeing the match, not Jinder's promo on SmackDown. You're right, because he was talking about his trip to India, wasn't he, and saying that he was treated by he was received like the Hollywood treatment or the Bollywood treatment, and he was treated like a king over there. And there was a little spark of personality in that promo. I enjoyed it as well, you know, as far as it went. And then he issued the challenge for this match that really, to me, seems like a total waste of our time.
The other thing about the match, to take Jinder out of the equation about how anybody feels about Jinder and his title reign, the issue for me is, No Mercy, was it No Mercy?
Yes.
And No Mercy, it took Brock Lesnar 6 minutes to beat Braun Strowman with one F5.
Yeah.
So to me, there is no way on God's green earth that Jinder should be getting anywhere close to that.
Well, he shouldn't be, no. I mean, he called himself in the promo, Jinder said, I am the greatest WWE champion of all time. This was after the fans had chanted, you can't wrestle at him.
Which, to be fair to him, the credit I give him is that he could have let that throw him, and instead he just laughed at them and held up the belt and said, let me remind you, I am your WWE champion. I'm always a big fan when wrestlers react to chants, because it shows that they're actually willing to go with what's happening. So I appreciate that. The Brock and Braun match went 9 minutes, not six. So, yeah, the thing is, like, everybody's kind of going, oh, you know, Brock's going to beat him. But to me, I remember when the Orton Jinder match happened and everyone thought Orton was going to win. And I remember being very uncomfortable, and I'm starting to feel uncomfortable again. So, I mean, can you imagine if we live in a world? I just can't.
To me, what does it? I don't see what this match achieves. Whoever wins, who really gets over? I mean, it's just filler, Kenny. You know, this is the WWE Network. This is the great drawback to the WWE Network. And also, WWE just feels like it can present this stuff. If Survivor Series were on pay-per-view, we didn't have the WWE Network, there is no way they would have the balls to present this match. They just wouldn't, because they would know that the pay-per-view number would be in the toilet. And this is the WWE Network for you, WWE Network era. It means you don't have to try. In many ways, it's become, you know, it's the enemy of, I wouldn't say it's the enemy of all promise, the WWE Network era, but I mean, it really is preventing WWE from being as good as it could be and as good as it should be. And they're presenting these matches that no one really wants to see. But it's like, well, it doesn't matter because people have already paid the money. So if you're upset about it, the way to respond is to cancel your WWE Network subscription. And that is the only way that WWE will stop presenting matches like Brock versus Jinder and Finn the Demon versus Sister Abigail and all these other matches that no one's really that bothered about watching. I mean, you just said yourself, Kenny, a moment ago that TLC this Sunday is effectively a one-match show.
Yeah, and I do understand, you know, Survivor Series, Team Raw versus Team SmackDown. I actually really enjoyed the matches last year. you know, the women's match and the men's match and the tag team match. I do like those matches, but yeah, Brock and Jinder just doesn't rock my boat at all.
No. No, I mean, what does it, where does it take either man? You know what I mean?
Yep.
Well, I have no idea. If anyone knows, can they write to us and let us know? Put us straight. Help us out.
What do you think of the rest of SmackDown? Any highlights or lowlights?
Well, it was quite interesting. Last week we were talking about who's going to challenge Jinder next, and we started talking about AJ Styles. And then we were like, well, can it be AJ Styles? Because he's just lost the US title in a triple threat match to Baron Corbin. And he's just done a clean job to Baron Corbin on SmackDown. So then AJ Styles comes out to interrupt Jinder Mahal's promo. And then Jinder Mahal calls AJ Styles a loser, which of course he is. So this thing that, you know, it's like we're thinking, oh, will it be Styles that will challenge Jinder? And then we're trying to apply logic to it, Kenny, if you remember. We're trying to apply logic. It can't be Styles because he's just lost. But Styles came out and interrupted him anyway. And then Jinder, the heel, called the babyface, Styles, a loser. So I found that. I just felt a bit sorry for Styles there, that he was put in that position. Another person I felt sorry for, Baron Corbin. I never thought I would say that, Kenny.
What the fuck was this?
What was
Sin
that?
Sin Cara.
Sin Cara. So we're talking about Corbin wins the title in this really riveting triple threat match. Pins Styles. Wow, biggest victory of his career. 1 week later, he faces Sin Cara, who hasn't been on TV in I don't know how long, and loses by count out to him. And I just thought, you know, I was telling before how there's these just like black holes in creative. That was one of them, Kenny.
The thing is, I do understand that, like, sometimes, you know, you can do something like this with a cocky champion to kind of bring him back down to earth. But he won the belt a week ago. And he just beat AJ Styles. Like, and this whole thing about, like, so I'm willing to accept that I was maybe wrong when I threw my toys out the pram about Aiden English beating Sami Zayn. Because it did propel Sami Zayn to becoming the Lord and Savior of SmackDown. So I will give that a pass. But at the same time, like, you have, to me anyway, people have to be built up to win things. You can't just give somebody a shoddy win and expect people to go, oh, he's good now.
Yeah, exactly. And Sin Cara isn't going to get over anyway. It's just never going to happen. So why not put somebody in this spot who is an up-and-comer if they've actually got any up-and-comers left? On the bright side, it was good to see Shelton Benjamin and Chad Gable play heel in that little segment with the Usos. I think Benjamin and Gable are going to do much better as heels than they would have done as faces. I thought they showed a lot of spark there. Really enjoyed that. Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens defeated Randy Orton and Shinsuke Nakamura in the main event. So yeah, that was a good little match there. Good to see Zayn score the pin. And then at the end of the show, they're there gloating and Daniel Bryan says, well, Shane McMahon's going to be here next week. You know, they say, what do you think to that, Daniel Bryan? Well, you can speak to Shane next week. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes. Also, there was Rusev and Aiden English did some up with the New Day. So I'm interested to see where that goes. Hopefully they can rebuild Rusev, you know? So
yeah,
we'll see.
I think Rusev and English, I've got to say, I thought the opening promo with Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens and Daniel Bryan was excellent. I thought that was really, really strong. And Sami Zayn is just knocking it out of the park so far.
Definitely, absolutely agreed. Yeah, I enjoyed the promo also. Yeah, and these guys are doing very well. Really good. And Daniel Bryan was really good in the segment as well. Really sold for them. Really put them over.
And it's interesting that, you know, Daniel Bryan is probably going to be wrestling in like 11 months, not for WWE, and they're setting it up.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's going to be an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, we've talked about, I don't really want to dwell on the Daniel Bryan potentially wrestling next year, because let's just see if that happens, and there's a lot can happen between now and then. But you're right, yeah, it's like almost like, well, the same Daniel Bryan up, and then, you know, will Zayn at that point then go back to the indie circuit and set that match up, or what's going to happen there? And yeah, it's, I mean, if WWE were to say to Bryan, right, we believe that you can wrestle again safely. I mean, they could do so much with Brian now. He'd be such a star in that company, wouldn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he is such a game changer. If he does, but like you say, we have dwelled on it in the past. I'm interested to see Shane coming back next week. I'm interested because, you know, are we going to see? We're probably going to see a Team Raw versus Team SmackDown men's match at Survivor Series. Are we also going to see a Team Shane versus Team KO match at Survivor Series? I don't know if there's enough people for all of that, but maybe we are. I'm curious to see who Shane McMahon recruits to help take on Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, because I don't think it's obvious who it's going to be at this point.
I'm curious as well. We'll see what happens next week. I mean, I just hope that Shane doesn't come back, and I just hope that this Sami Zayn push doesn't get squashed. That's all I hope.
Yeah, that is the key. We hope for that. I do also want to say one of the biggest travesties, people talk about, what's happened to Nakamura? Nakamura's fine compared to fucking Bobby Roode. He's on life support.
Oh, I mean, it's just like flatline, isn't it? You know what I mean?
He's clearly a heel, and he's not a babyface, but they're making him a babyface because of the entrance.
Yeah.
And he's facing arguably the most stagnant performer in the company.
I mean, I don't even know why Dolph Ziggler's there anymore. Obviously, he's there for the money, but I mean, it's just like this guy's career is just. I mean, remember when he had the matches with The Miz? Was it last year?
Main Ziggler was No Mercy, career versus title.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, what a match that was, and he's had just an awful year. I mean, I was under the impression that he was leaving, that his contract was up, and he was going. He just needs to get out of there. Because, I mean, I don't see what value Ziggler has anymore to WWE. And by being involved in WWE, whatever value he would have outside WWE is being eroded each week in this absolutely abysmal feud with Bobby Roode. I mean, you're right. It's like, who's the villain? Who's the hero? It's all just such a mishmash. It's just shambles, Kenny.
It is bad. It's pretty bad. And the thing is, it's leading us to another Dolph Ziggler-Bobby Roode match, which is
It is. Ziggler scored the pin by holding the tights. I mean, I've written here in my notes, deathly dull. My two words to describe that match and sums up that feud as well. I mean, it's not doing either man any favours. And he's just like, it's just a drain. You're right. I mean, you look at Bobby Roode and you think, well, what's the best case scenario for Bobby Roode now? And he's only been on the main roster for a short time, and it already feels like it's over for him. It's almost like he's like one step away from becoming, you know, Mike Kanellis. You know what I mean?
It's pretty bad. The last thing I kind of wanted to touch on the show this week was something that came up in the US. Dana White was a guest on Good Day New York the other day to promote the Madison Square Garden UFC show. And he was asked about Conor McGregor being at WrestleMania. He says it's not true. He's got texts from Vince McMahon to prove it. And the talk of using Conor is incorrect because... basically all but confirmed that WWE want to use Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania this year. So I guess for you, as someone, you know, having watched all the WrestleManias, do you think Ronda Rousey is going to be a big deal for WWE for WrestleMania? Would she still move the needle and bring in some mainstream appeal, or do you think that her values slip, but it won't make as much of a difference now?
I mean, it's going to get the mainstream stories, but I mean, WWE gets those for WrestleMania anyway. I mean, that is the show that all the mainstream websites, publications, or the publications that are left do cover. So I think it will do. I mean, as far as moving the needle, I'm not sure whether that's really going to make that much difference. But the game's all changed in the WWE network era now anyway, Kenny, as you know. I mean, in the run-up to WrestleMania, the strongly advertised WrestleMania, sign up for the WWE network, it's free, you get WrestleMania for free, you get this for free, you get that for free, and all these people sign up for it, get WrestleMania, TakeOver, and all these other events for free, and then when the trial's up, they just unsubscribe and then go back to the general business, and then the following year they do the same thing, perhaps under a different email address. So yeah. I don't know whether it's going to make that much difference to people actually paying for the WWE Network. It probably will get this artificial increase of people who were fans of her when she was in UFC. Oh, let's watch the Ronda Rousey match. Let's just sign up. It's not going to cost us any money, which is, again, the great flaw in the WWE Network. I think we've discussed this before, haven't we, Kenny, that if WrestleMania was like still on pay-per-view and that was like the one event where you actually had to pay for it, it'd still be generating huge revenue for that event because people once a year will buy the event.
Yeah, it's madness that they don't do it. You know, even Rumble, SummerSlam, and Mania, I think would all do pretty decent pay-per-view buy rates compared to everything else. But
absolutely. I think it will be something that will be a story, but as far as a revenue generator, I don't think so. No.
Well, that's going to be it for this week. We've kind of covered everything. Next week, we might take some more of your questions again. It'll be that time. But Finn, before we go, if people want to go and buy some of your books or read some of your stuff or get in touch with you and just tell you how much they love you, where can they do that?
Well, they can follow me on Twitter at Finlay Martin or at PowerSlam Online, or my website is at www.finlaymartin.co.uk. You can, the links to my books are there. So please check those out if you haven't done so already. Obviously, Kenny and I, we should just mention, we're both involved in the WrestleTalk magazine as well. So please check that out as well if you haven't done so. And where can people find you, Kenny?
You can find me at KennyMC1985. You can also find Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. If you want to sign up to our Patreon service, which is at patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, tons of bonus podcasts, and you get the PowerSlam podcast 24 hours early, so you can download that. And yeah, next week we'll talk a little bit about the WrestleTalk magazine that we're involved with, and that'll be fun. But Finn, thank you again for hopping in the podcast machine with me, as always.
Thank you for having me, and we will be discussing TLC next week. We'll look forward to that, and look forward to the next recording, Kenny.
So thanks very much for listening, everyone. Enjoy TLC, and just remember, if we don't get Sister Abigail on Sunday, there is a God, and he has answered our prayers. We'll see you next week. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.